Okay, we're ready?
Yep.
Well, we'll call the meeting to order. Reminder to the public that all meetings are being recorded. Public comment on matters not included on the agenda. Consent agenda. You guys have anything you want to pull off for further discussion? Consent.
Move to approve.
Second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Chief's report.
All right, gang. It's on the agenda item. we've had about 340 calls for the year. Currently have 45 members on our roster. So have 7 resident firefighters at Sourdough. And still have our sleeper program at Cottonwood and 3 firefighters living at the Ray House. We just started our fall recruit academy. I should say it starts this week on tomorrow night. And we have 4 folks in that.
Question?
4.
Is that kind of your number that you like?
It's actually not. I mean, we would prefer to have 6 as our maximum, but in our selection process, we really only had 4 that really stood out for us. So
we have still quite a few applicants.
I had plenty of applicants, just a lot of people that weren't serious about being on the department. And our experience has shown us that they end up dropping out partway through, or, you know, people are seniors at MSU. And
okay.
We ask, you know, what are you doing when you graduate? I don't know. And that's not very reassuring, because our recruit academy takes almost 4 months.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of work and a lot of training and investment in those folks. So we have to have a pretty good feeling that they're going to stick around.
And just through experience, you're able to vet that out a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's just asking them about what their plans are for the next 2 years of their life. Because that's what we tell them, is we need at least 2 years of service for all the training and time that we're putting into them. And if they can't give us a pretty good assurance, and even when they do, people end up leaving. So if people can't tell us they're going to be in Bozeman for the next 2 years with some certainty, then we don't really risk it on them.
Cool.
Yeah. So we can still continue to do our command trainings twice a month. That's gone really well. This month we had one of the command officers from Gateway Fire come over and train with us, because we always invite the other departments. So far we've had Fort Ellis, Bozeman Fire, and Gateway all come and do command training with us. So that's kind of fun.
How are you finding, if you mind if I just ask?
Oh, please.
How are you finding, particularly at like Fort Ellis and Gateway, in terms of their department, they're robust, they have any? Did they get the volunteers they need, or they?
I think Fort Ellis appears to be doing pretty well. Gateway, just from my listening to calls and otherwise, I don't think they're doing nearly as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they seem to be struggling to get volunteers. Yeah, they have a tough demographic.
Right.
For getting volunteers, they don't have much chance at young people in school and but I feel like that's kind of been a Gateway thing for last decade or so. They've always had trouble.
So when you bring in from the other department, they're just brushing their skills up, or the people are moving into that position?
No, it's people that typically are their command officers, and those departments just don't do command training.
Oh okay. Yeah,
they don't do it. And we figure the more the merrier, and by getting them to the training, it just helps when we're actually on a call with them, that we're a little better integrated into what they're doing. And it was nice when we had Bozeman Fire here, they were using certain terminology that we didn't use, just whatever the nomenclature of their department was, and it was great for us to hear and say, okay, you just said that. What does that mean to your department? They tell them, like, oh, okay. got it. And same with us, we use terminology that they say, what do you mean by that? And we explain, they go, oh, okay, that makes sense. So it just comes out much smoother when we're actually on a call together. Okay. Yeah, so it's a pretty big win, actually, uh-huh. getting them out.
And no cost to them? Or,
no.
Because they're just kind of there.
No, yeah.
You're there anyway.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. They're just along for the ride. We got a new ISO rating. And I'm not sure of the last time we were rated, but I'm pretty sure it was more than 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Easily. But we came out with an overall rating. We did not get a dual rating in our district, which I was a little concerned about since our hydranted area has kind of grown a little bit. But we have an overall rating for the entire district of 4.
Oh, that was pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. I was pretty concerned about it given the growth of our district. And really when I did the math, as I wrote in here, we don't, from a structure fire standpoint, we don't have additional stations. I mean, just because we built this station, ISO doesn't care. It's a station.
Right.
That's all they care about. But we don't have any additional apparatus for firefighting than we did when we had our last rating. So with the increase in calls and all that, I think for a rural fire district that is largely unserviced by municipal type water, a rating of 4 is pretty fantastic.
Remind us of the ISO rating. Clarkston is 0 or 1?
Well, 10 is basically the worst score.
Worst score.
No.
Yeah, so 1 is the best score. Bozeman just got re-rated and dropped down to a 3.
From a 2?
They were a 4. So they got better. They went from a 4 to a 3. And to compare that, a city municipal fire department that has a hydrant every 500 feet, an incredibly robust water system, and a full-time paid fire department with 3 stations, and we're only 1 point behind them.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
What would some of our neighbors be rated, do you suppose, for the Lesser Gateway? Or?
You know, I don't know what their ratings are, but I'm sure they're...
I know when we were at the trustee training last year, a good majority of those guys were 7s, 8s.
Yeah.
That seems to be for a volunteer rural fire department, at least from the sample of fire departments that were there, 7, 8 is kind of, and so I look at the fact that we have a very robust training program. We've got testing of our water sites. We've got great apparatus, and we have a maintenance and a replacement record, which then, you know, leads to us keeping a good fiduciary approach on this.
The resident program bought us a lot of points.
The resident buys. I think there was only one thing we don't do.
The
inspection program is the only thing that this department doesn't tend to do. And we don't have a fire marshal to do it, really.
It mean be doing life safety inspections on all the commercial buildings in our district. And if you guys want to see the batch report, yeah, you know, I can come into my office and I'll lay out and you can see where we got allotted points and where we came up short on points. But our fire inspection program is definitely, that's where we took a hit. But
but by looking at that didn't take us out of being a 3.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, so.
And it's the hours that our firefighters are in district, even if they're not.
When at the station?
Well, it's at station time, so we can count all of our sleeper program. We can count the resident program. If they're in the station, the ISO views them as the same as a paid staff member. So we had to accumulate all those hours and demonstrate those
Which
hours.
Which is why we wanted to watch football here at the station.
Yep.
And just for the record, why don't you go ahead and say what the ISO does for the residents of the district? Why is that?
Okay, so the ISO is the Insurance Services Organization, and they are a third-party evaluating body that creates this point system so that insurance companies can create the premiums for homeowners insurance. So if you live in an area that has a rating of 9, your homeowner's insurance cost will reflect that and they'll be higher. So the lower the ISO rating, the lower insurance costs are for homeowners. So a low rating, and in a particularly for commercial businesses, a low ISO rating saves money on insurance.
And do you remember your number?
The insurance
that you saved when it went down because the Cottonwood station was?
Yeah, you know, I don't recall it right off. I don't know. I'd be really winging it to, but it was.
It seemed to me you felt it was significant.
It was significant. Yeah, it was definitely significant when the Cottonwood station came.
When we did it before, and I think we were an 8 when we made it to the 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was Candy Rose did her house, and it's average for this area. It's not huge like some. It was $145 a year.
Mm-hmm.
So it was significant in that change.
Yeah. It's basically a rating of risk for insurance companies.
Some insurance companies don't use it, but it still reflects, like State Farm does it from an experience standpoint. So when State Farm has an incident with one of their policyholders, they see how the fire department performed in that area. So they kind of do their self-evaluations.
Well, let's hope those structures that you guys saved recently over the past year were State Farmers.
Right.
So out of curiosity, the Rahoffs, given that those three individuals that are staying there now aren't technically in the station.
But according to ISO, they are.
They're
okay,
on property.
They're on the property. Okay, that's what I was wondering, because that does decrease their response. And we had actually realized that, right, with one of the structure incidents.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, so they're on property.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Nice work.
Yeah.
I'd just be curious, you know, sometimes you think it's worth trying to grind it to a 3 or 2 or... What you think?
I mean, yeah,
obviously a cost implication to that.
There is, yeah. And yeah, we could sit down with the batch reports and try to come up with what that would cost us and what the it's a tough thing to really pin down.
Sure.
To look at every homeowner in the district and try to do the math on. Okay, if you know this person saved $50 by going from a 4 to 3, but I think for most residential property owners, going from a 4 to 3 would not be a significant savings. Now, going from an 8 to 4, there's savings there, but it seems to be a little bit of diminishing returns. Sure. The lower and lower you get.
Well, and I think everything that was implemented in order to try to get to a lower ISO. Was also balanced by what our belief of our residents' expectations are. Mm-hmm. So, you know, now if you're fighting down, do the residents want a commercial inspection for safety at commercial businesses? And I don't know that answer because I haven't really asked anybody, but they did want quick response and capable response, you know, so that's kind of the balance there.
Well, and that's where the Cottonwood station, getting that 5-mile radius covered with another station.
Does that come into ISO, the radius?
Yes, so in the ISO world, any property that is greater than 5 miles from a fire station, no matter what the rating is, it's automatically a 10. Automatically. Now, the nice thing is that with the locations of our three stations, I don't think anybody falls out of that 5-mile point. And that's why we didn't really get a 410 or anything like that, is that I don't think any, I'd like to say I'm positive that there's not a property that is not within 5 miles of a fire station, but I'm pretty sure that that's the case.
And that was the whole reason for Cottonwood.
Correct.
Well, as we're working on getting the website updated, this is just a piece of good news we should just throw out there.
Yep.
For those who are curious about it.
And please make sure there's a little explanation as to what ISO is.
Right.
Because most people reading the website might not be familiar with why that is at all significant.
And I know Crandall said at one time when we were at an 8, I think he was hoping for a 6, and I said, well, what does it do to get better? He said hydrants.
Well, that really is. So another explanation that you guys might be interested in is there's really, the ISO rating is a 3-part rating system. The fire department is actually just one part of it and only comprises about 60% of the score. then your water system is another percentage of score, and then your dispatch center. So there's actually 40% of our score that we have very little, if any, control over. Just kind of the way it goes. But as in, you know, just as a comparison, because of just the geographic layout, when I was in Big Sky, we had a dual rating. And we were a 5 in our hydrated areas and an 8 in our unhydrated areas. And I'd be curious to see what, as they're getting re-rated, how they'll come out. But 4 is pretty good.
Yeah. I think it's outstanding. I just don't think we could, based on what Jason and I have talked about, and I went to that ISO training when the gal was here and listened, I don't think we can get to a 3 on a cost versus reward basis.
Yeah.
But I just think it's fantastic, because I really thought we might slip up.
I thought we'd lose a point or two.
Yeah, I did too.
Just because of the way they changed their ratings.
Yep.
Yep. 40% of your scores outside of your control, it's a pretty tough deal.
Cool. So, thank you.
Yeah. So I talked to you guys months ago, maybe a lot of months ago, about trying to aggregate and rezone the Ray property, because we own two pieces of property. And I was thinking that the smart thing to do would be to aggregate the two pieces into one.
Can you just draw this on the board for me? I do not have a good image.
Okay, thanks.
You were looking for it too. Sorry.
Did you prep him for this, or is he just having to do this cold?
This is a pretty good one. For some
He's doing really well
tonight. See, look at that.
All right, so our current fire station sits here.
It's not even as wide as the road?
On a piece of front.
It's pretty narrow.
So it sits on this property. Then we purchased this piece of property right here. With the little...
The Ray House.
Ray House.
Formerly known as the Harn House.
Formerly known as the Harn House.
Harn. It was Harn property.
Yeah, so I figured it'd be best just to get rid of this line, make it all one big property. Both parcels are zoned high-density multifamily, and I thought that might be an issue for building a fire station in the future, and I thought, better get this taken care of early than wait till we really have plans to do it. So I had a meeting with planning and zoning.
And this is the city of Rose.
No.
Oh, we're outside.
No, we're outside.
It's okay. In Ray Water and Sewer.
Yeah.
It's outside of city.
So I had a meeting with planning and zoning, and what they basically told me was that the aggregation wasn't going to buy us anything, because since we own both parcels, we can do whatever we want. We can build on the property line. It doesn't matter. And that cost is a $200 fee. And then we would have to hire an attorney to recreate language for a new deed. So he said, I wouldn't spend the money. Just, I wouldn't bother with it. And I said, okay, well, how about the zoning issue? And he goes, well, again, you guys are a public safety entity, and you have to go in front of a board, and I wish I could remember the name of it. Do you know the name of the board, Craig? There's a board that you have to go in front, but they basically can't say no to us because we provide an essential service to the community. So he said, again, I wouldn't waste your time or money rezoning it either, because when you guys go to that board, because you're building a fire station, unless they get a bunch of protests, but even if they get protests, they still can't deny us the ability to build a fire station there. So my recommendation as a board is that
we're
just leave it alone.
We're on the other,
we're okay.
The other side that you and I discussed too is that should some golden opportunity be thrown in our lap to say, you know, move west just slightly or just right in that area, the leaving it as is provides us with more flexibility with regard to
how big is that?
Well, just to give you an idea, the scale, the new piece of property that we purchased, this building will fit on that property with, you could drive around it still.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so there's enough room.
So sometime in the future, if we want
it's close to 3 days.
Do a serious upgrade there to that station.
I don't call that.
You bought two
more like this. Right. We have the space to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. That other piece, I think, is only a quarter acre, Dave, the Gooch Hill.
We bought two. They bought 2 acres. Yeah.
I think it's only a quarter.
Yeah. The other is quite, maybe a half. Is it half?
At the most.
Chuck's thinking quarter, but I think maybe it's somewhere a quarter. I think it's half somewhere.
But, and we're 3 acres here, so it's real close as far as footprint.
I think the only downside to that property, which is not, in my opinion, any reason to not like it, is the access onto Gooch, a driveway. I think they would push if we tried to get a driveway too close to Huffine. So, like, where we can have one property driveway at one end and the other end, we probably can't do that.
Right. Essentially, north of that, between the property line and Huffine, is an easement. Or
well, there's a lot of
space.
There's another.
So I believe any driveway, if we wanted to put a driveway coming out of here, it has to be 150 feet.
And I think we checked. Right, we checked that out, and I think we could do.
Yeah. Who owns that lot just to the north? Is there any
I think it belongs to the Lemieux family, I believe, still.
I think it's for sale, though.
It is. Been on and off the market. And I don't, well, one of the, Kendall, he just passed away not long ago, but I believe it still belongs to the Lemieux
family. Would it do much for us if we bought that lot? Would that make life easier?
I think
so. Well, they want a lot.
It won't change that 150 feet piece, yeah.
Not really. And getting access to Huffine doesn't help because there's a stoplight there anyway.
Yeah, so kind of the concept I had in, you know, just as a, just thinking into the future was that, so we have a driveway, an apron into this station, is that if we did a station, we would orient it this way with the bays like this, and then we could create a pull through here and then pull out here. And have drive-through capability, and it would fit on there. We don't have setback problems because, again, we're, as a public safety entity, we're kind of exempt from setbacks as well.
And again, there'd be enough room if you chose to add a, you know, another community venue or another space such as off it, you know, in the future for growth.
And this building here, we could just keep and turn into a shop or storage space, just like we did with this.
So we clearly use buildings.
Yeah.
And the other thing we did before we purchased, we did a geotech on it. So, I mean, in terms of bearing capacity, over X or any of that type of stuff, it's all within reason.
And it's all on sewer and obviously power and all that kind of stuff.
It's Ray water sewer. Yeah.
It's currently on Ray water, but it has a septic. But, you know, they're just right over here. Yeah. So that would be an easy hookup. This is all wet in here because there's an irrigation ditch that runs through the property like that. So this is a little wet in here, but when they did the geotech,
it's load bearing.
Yeah,
so
all
it
this
has got to be built up. Yeah.
Yeah. Is the Gooch station on septic?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the line though to tap into it though, we could. It wouldn't be. It's right there, right?
Well, yeah, and they're running a new sewer line.
The outfall line is.
They're running a new sewer line through here right now to handle capacity over here. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would not be an issue.
So just to play this out a little bit, because we haven't talked about it much or I haven't paid attention to it much, in your thinking, so there would be a trigger point where you would say, boy, it really is time for us to have a new station. Would that be some combination of it's full at the end, we got more people who want to stay, and we want to. We've got growth in the county. We need, or in our area, we need to upgrade all those sorts of things. And you're even thinking 5 years, 7 years, 3 years, 2 years.
It's really hard to tell, but without a doubt, all 98% of our growth is right here. That's where all of it is. So we couldn't ask. We couldn't ask to have a potential spot for a new resident station than right here. I mean, it's at the epicenter.
How far down Huffine do you go before you hit Gateway's jurisdiction? Do you get
all
the way to Four Corners? Yep. So that there's Wrestler, and then I can't even remember what that new development's called.
Woodland Farms.
That's all in ours.
Yeah. Yeah, we have everything on the south side of Huffine out to Four Corners, and then we have some to the north as well.
And basically all that developed, the housing part of it, well, there's new commercial stuff going in close to where Love Lane, just directly across from them. But the other side, a lot, of, I don't know how many acres, Cooks?
The Cooks, I saw the master plan, and it's phenomenally big.
800 or 1,000 homes or something.
Yeah. Going in there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, Chuck, could we figure what the burden to taxpayers would be in terms of a mill levy by calculating in the revenues we get from these new developments? Is there a way to sort of anticipate what expected revenue streams might be from property taxes, or is that just...
In the past, working with Ed, you can, but you can definitely come up with an idea, but it's still a swag. You can look at the types of homes that are going to get built in there and stuff like that, and so you can, but it's almost like with anything with mill levies, until you have an actual number, you can be dead wrong. I don't think grossly wrong, but you'd have to, if you're going to use that for any kind of planning, I would strongly urge that we be incredibly conservative, kind of like when we've done some of our other financial planning. Yes, let's be conservative as heck. But the neat thing is as those come on, like with this building, as those come on, the burden to the existing taxpayer continues to go down because they come on the tax rolls and they get levied. So you can kind of look at it. I think if for ones that are like that are already platted and put there, but if we get a downturn and we slow down the building, stuff like that. So all those factors can really throw a curveball into it.
Yeah.
And I don't think we actually know what a trigger point is. Whether it's this line or that line.
It's probably going to be a little bit based on response, right? To a large extent, it's what's going to drive it, this response.
Well, and ironically, one of the funny things is we've got fire department members, volunteers living in that subdivision, which has had it help the Gooch Hill Station, even though they are not a sleeper program. They're a block away. Yeah. Whereas here, where do you live a block away from the station? Yeah. You have to live here.
Yeah, that's interesting. All very interesting.
But I, and it's crystal ball stuff, but it's within 10 years, I think. Five? The economy keeps going like this, that could be.
And I don't recall, there's some of our jurisdiction goes across to the north side of Huff Line too, right? There's a fair bit that goes on the north side. And that's not Ray Water and Sewer, though, mm-hmm. right?
Is that the city of Bozeman across the street?
Well,
patchwork. It's like Costco, isn't it?
Right. Well, we have island parcels, but the contiguous stuff on across from Huff Line.
We have Love Lane all the way past Baxter.
Right. Yeah, I guess, yeah.
A lot going on out there. Blackpool's in Gate.
Central Valley.
Central Valley. So just across the road on the plane. Cool. Anything else? Any public comment?
Oh, I'm so good.
Oh, are you guys watch? You're not done yet?
I'm going to make this a meeting. Golly.
If you draw that picture, that'd be wore out.
Yeah. So we're currently working with a vendor trying to purchase some used handheld radios. The handheld radios that we have in all of our trucks are old. Old, old, old. And they're terrible.
Vacuum tube old?
Yeah.
80s.
No, they're 80s old. We can't get any parts for them. Harper searches on eBay for batteries for them. We had to have the batteries actually rebuilt when they go bad, and that's...
Yeah, I think we got them in the grant program way back then.
Yeah, a couple $100 every time we rebuild a battery. It's just, they're draining us. So I hate to go buy brand new radios, but
we have a problem too, because we're waiting to see where the frequencies go.
Yeah, I'm not waiting anymore.
Another reason for maybe not.
Yeah, that's become an act of futility, waiting for that decision to get made. I think I told you guys that the 911 director is now gone. They have an interim, and so, but we can buy some very good radios that are used, and Harper's found this deal for us, and so we're trying to get some pricing and find out about things like if they come with fully usable batteries, or if that's another cost we're going to have to incur.
Because yeah, why would there be used radios? Because somebody changed frequencies?
Yeah. Or just those fire departments and police departments that just upgrade radios every 2 to 3 years.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely. So, I mean, Bozeman's got a bunch of radios that I'd love to get from them, because they switched over to needing dual frequency radios because the city has gone to 800 megahertz.
Would you tell him not to throw them away?
I'm all over him about those radios, because I want them. Because they're exactly the ones that we would buy. It's called a...
What's the holdup? Why are they holding on them?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. But they've been really good about giving me stuff in the past. So, yeah. So I'll come back to you guys with pricing once we have that down. But I think that's the most economical thing we can do at this point is to get these good condition.
As long as you're not cutting corners.
Yeah. No, they're good radios.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, we have how many of the 5,000s right now?
I don't know, 30 maybe?
Yeah. And so we'd just be adding to that, and they're solid radios.
They're still Motorola, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're solid radios. And then all our apparatus in service and no significant damages or firefighter injuries.
Yeah. Any public comment on Jason's stuff?
Yeah. My name is Craig White. Just to keep it in the back of your mind and make you aware that if the city of Bozeman annexes out and takes that piece of property, they get a fire station free and clear according to state statute. So that might enter into whatever the city's going to do when they move out. And then
they would have
you guys
to,
want to stay.
I think they would have to annex the whole district to get that station. It's not a geography thing. They would have to annex all of Highlight to get its assets. Or a significant percentage.
Well, there's a compensation, isn't there? I think we have a discussion about that, isn't there?
We've talked about it before, and I kind of lost track of what was.
Yeah, no, the only thing I just keep in the back of your mind, because if you're going to put a lot of money into a new station, it might be that why would you put a station on the edge or maybe even not the edge of your service area? And maybe you would want to move it more.
And I think that's where you came from, is at least that's saleable if we can get in.
Yes.
Somewhere a little further west we would like to.
Yeah, that's what
You took a swing at that.
We actually looked at some lots to the west in the development that Cook's working on, and we looked at a couple of the commercial lots, and they were outrageously priced.
Yeah, anything that you're dealing with, it's outrageously priced. But what I'm saying, it was also in my thinking that it would probably be wise to keep those in two parcels.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Because you would get more bang for your buck.
Right, it would be more marketable and stuff. So.
That's
why. Okay, trustee activities, which I believe the only thing that's on the forefront right now is the trustees training session. And the dates are the 29th, 30th, and the 1st. It's at Fairmont again. I know, I think between Chuck and I, we emailed everybody with all the information and stuff, so. I have not seen an agenda yet, have you?
It's on there.
Yeah.
It's right there, I think, those days.
Yeah. Did you guys get the mail? I got it from the mail.
Did you end up getting one? Okay.
Yeah. Actually, they sent a couple of them.
So, just as the way we've got this set up, then we need to just
approve
it as an official event that the trustees can go to and should. From what Chuck and I did last year, it was well worth the time. So I believe with that, because Chuck's not going to go because of prior commitments. So, I'm going to ask you to come with me, Jason, and where we have to do the talking. I haven't got all the details.
I'm not sleeping in the same room. John, here this way. Not done.
Okay. I think that means
I won't go. I can't sleep by myself.
That's why I'm not too reserved. You like to cuddle too much.
This meeting is being recorded.
So
he wants to go on the water slide with you too.
That's right.
I thought it would be good from a chief's perspective for the trustees there, because you have 16 years experience in the consolidation world from an operational standpoint, which is hugely important too. And when he went out, I thought that it would have been a good idea anyway, just from that standpoint. So if your calendar would so permit.
And I'd still, I know Walt already said he isn't going and you'll go if you can, but I'd still highly recommend that the two newest elected trustees, even though you're incumbent from the period before, go if possible. I just like that on the record, that to me it makes the most sense that whoever has the longest term, those two are kind of priority to go, or those one in the case of the odd year election. But it'd be really, I can't say how much I've said it so many times in these meetings, but I think training is essential for trustees, and more so than anything, being with your contemporaries from other districts and learning their problems can help put us ahead of problems. And, you know, even though we didn't go terribly far with the charging for accidents, some research has been done. We've got some information. If that time comes that we think we've got to revisit it, we're not starting at ground zero. So there's all kinds of things that can come out of it that I know from my experience last year were totally unexpected. I was not excited to go. I hadn't planned to go. And I thought we should at least go see what this organization, because it's a fairly new organization, would provide. And after walking away from it, I thought, you know what? That was what time was it spent. So I'm going to put in a word for that encouragement. And I don't know, I don't know how we wrote, is it a motion to approve it or is it an affirmation to approve it? But does anybody have any objections to not approving this as an official trustee training?
We've been talking about it forever.
Yeah, I think we have, okay.
Do you want to put in a motion, just?
I don't know how we wrote.
For the record.
Fine, I'll move that it becomes a approved trustee training for 2017, one of the approved trainings for 2017. Okay.
I guess we should have got some public comment first.
You probably should before we vote on it.
But I was, as a point, I was going there just for the record.
But that's okay. It can be commented on after a moment.
Any public comment on the trustee activities? Do we have anything else? Anybody else have anything else on trustee activities?
No? I do. I'm going to talk with Holmes and Turner's about the audit contract for this coming year, because Rosie is going to be able to produce, because of our hiring change and because of such, she's going to be able to produce financial statements, audited financial statements, which means that she'll produce them and then they'll check it. So she won't be doing the audit, so they'll become audited financials, but she's going to be able to produce financial statements. And as a result of that, we don't have to pay Holmes and Turner, our auditor, to do so. So I'm gonna go in and visit with them.
So it's a different scope of work, yeah.
Well, it's less work. It's right. Less work for Holmes and Turner because we've hired an accountant now that can do more.
Okay.
And so as a result of that, my intention is to go in there this week and renegotiate that contract based on the savings that she's providing.
Any public comment on the trustee activities presented? Okay, go with your motion.
I made it.
Oh, I have a second.
All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Next month's meeting?
October 17th would be the regular date.
How does that work for everybody?
Good for me so far.
All right, we'll call it at October 17th at 7 p.m. Anything particular that we want?
And just looking at my previous weekend, the sourdough pancake breakfast is the 14th. I don't know if you've announced that yet, or is that in
concrete? Yeah, we should announce that.
But I mean, we might as well announce it at a meeting. So it's the 14th.
Yeah.
So we'll have the
pancake. You are doing it again this year, aren't you?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, we're
cool.
Batting it around.
What day is it?
The 14th, Saturday the 14th.
October.
And I did have somebody actually ask me about that, and I said, I think we talked about it a little last time, and I wrote it down in my notes, but
I think the fire department and the firefighters association goes through a little bit more gyration to try to make sure that they're on a weekend, that there are less conflicts.
Yeah, we tried to avoid opening of rifle season and home games for MSU, and that was pretty much the only date we got.
And activities at Anderson.
Yeah.
Cool. If there's no other announcements, I guess.
Move to adjourn.
We move to adjourn.
Second.
We're done.
Jason, how's it?